タラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタタララタラタラタラタタ。
Hello and welcome. I'm Caroline.
And I'm Helen.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
Today we are chatting with Rochelle New. Rochelle is the blogger behind Lucky Lucille and the designer behind Home Row Fiber Co., where she sells custom designed goods for crafters. We chat about paving your own way in business, living with a chronic disease, and how she found her spirit animal,
Lucille!
Lucille! Hi, Rochelle. Thank you so much for coming on the show to chat with us today.
Hi.
We are so excited to have you because I've mentioned this on the show before. I, Helen, have mentioned this, that you were the first blogger that I ever discovered in the sewing world. So it's an honor to have you here. And we can't wait to chat with you about everything that you have going on.
Thank you so much. That really, it just totally blows my mind that anyone would say that I was like the first anything that they followed. So thank you. I appreciate that so much.
I mean, anyone can be the first point of entry for anyone in this community, and that's the wonderful thing about it. So to start off, can you introduce yourself and maybe tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So my name is Rochelle, and if you are a sewer, you probably know me from my personal blog, Lucky Lucille, and that's where I share my sewing and knitting projects and even some quilting when the mood strikes. It's also just a place where I allow myself to muse about like things I've learned about myself through sewing and knitting. And then recently, last year, I launched a business venture called Home Row Fiber Co., and that is mostly geared towards knitters, but actually I sew most of the products that I, you know, have for sale in my shop or things that I've made or things that I've designed. And so, yeah, I guess I'm not good at talking about myself, so.
I feel like that's a good thing though, right?
Yeah, to be a little obnoxiously humble is a good thing, I think.
So, Rochelle, where are you from?
I was raised in a really tiny, tiny town that no one's ever heard of in New York called Alfred. And the only reason why it's on the map is we have two colleges in the same town and only one traffic light. So that's a special thing. So that's where I grew up. I also lived in Vermont for a while outside of Burlington, and much of my sewing and knitting career kind of takes off in Vermont. But I moved home a couple years ago, and now I live in the Finger Lakes region of New York, which is a really beautiful, picturesque, it's basically the East Coast's wine country.
Sounds so idyllic.
It does. I'm sure there's lots of inspiration in the nature around you.
Yeah, especially living so close to the lake is really just a very beautiful, serene. It's also like very touristy too in the summer. So it's, you know, it's give and take as far as how picturesque and how, you know, tourists aren't exactly pretty to look at, I guess. But, you know.
So, Rochelle, tell me, how and when did you learn to sew?
So I grew up in a house with a sewing machine. I grew up thinking that moms were the only ones who made Halloween costumes. It was like this bogus concept that you could buy a Halloween costume in a store, because my mom definitely did a lot of sewing when I was young. So I was familiar with the process of sewing. I watched my mom sew a lot, but I was terrified of a sewing machine, which sounds really strange, but it was like noisy and like fast. And I just never really attempted to sew until high school, when I took a home ec class and was kind of forced to actually use a sewing machine. And I really loved it and kind of hated it at the same time. Again, like I felt like it was just kind of scary. Like, I don't know what it is about me and like mechanical things where I just like, if I can use my hands to do it, like I would much rather take that route. Sometimes I amaze myself that I can drive a car. So I like fumbled my way through home ec and made my little quilted pillow. And I was not a natural seamstress by any stretch of the word. But I did. I enjoyed it. I've always loved assembling things and building things, and just the fact that you could take pieces of material and put them together and basically create whatever you want was just kind of magical to me. And even though, like, I didn't really get super into sewing until many years later, like, it just always stuck with me that sewing was pretty cool, even though, like, no one else in high school really felt like that.
So what has your sewing journey been like? When did you pick it back up and actually get more serious about sewing your clothes and other things in your life?
So I dabbled a lot, but it wasn't until college. I actually majored in veterinary technology because animals are a huge passion of mine. But, you know, like, I am very much an artistic person. Science and math fascinates me, but it's not my strong suit. And so much of vet tech is very sciencey and like microbiology. And I was just struggling creatively to get through it. And so, like, anytime we had some sort of school project where I had to make a poster about bacteria, I went over the top, like, just desperate for like a creative outlet. So that was when I started blogging. I registered the domain Lucky Lucille in late 2010, I think. And like the first year and a half of my blog was just me complaining about how much I hated school. Not hated it, but, you know, like, it just was really, I just needed that because I also love photography. I love writing and I love making stuff. And I was just not able to do any of that going to school for vet tech. So, kind of started sewing a little bit more, just like I said, for just a creative outlet, just to try to pick up a hobby. And when I graduated college, I had pretty much at that point decided that I was too emotionally sensitive to be a vet tech as a career. It's very difficult if you are overly empathetic, if you're a sensitive person, like, to be, it didn't help that I did my internship in an animal shelter. So it just, there's good days, but most of the time I just felt very depressed that I could not literally save all of the animals. So I got it in my head that I was going to move to Vermont. And I actually had my eyes set on this internship in Vermont that had to do with raptors, with birds. And I know, like, listening to Jen Beeman's episode, I get it. I totally am also, like, into the birds. But where we ended up living was just a little bit too far away for me to get that internship. But meanwhile, I was still sewing and I was trying to, like, start an Etsy shop because that's what you do when you're like, hey, I can sew and make some stuff. And one person told me I was kind of good at it. So, like, maybe I should be on Etsy. Anyways, so I had found a local quilt shop that also sold yarn and was just kind of going in, you know, every weekend to, like, pick up some stuff to just stay sane by making things. And I got offered a job. And so I started working at this really beautiful, just the most quintessentially perfect, adorable boutique in Vermont that sold quilting fabric and yarn. And sadly, it closed down recently because I would have told everyone that they needed to go and visit the shop. And so I started, I was still blogging for myself at the time, but then I also started blogging for this shop and I was making samples for the shop. And that, I think the Christmas that I started working there was the same season that the first Colette sewing book came out, the handbook. And then also that same time was when there was a sew-along called Sew Colette, and it was hosted by Erin at Miss Crayola Creepy and by Sarah, who blogged at the time at Rhinestones and Telephones. So that was kind of my first very serious, disciplined, like, okay, I bought this book. I know how to sew. I'm just going to start making my own clothes. And so I worked through the book, and there's only six projects in the book. But as that being, like, my first introduction to very seriously sewing my own clothes, it felt like not overwhelming, but it was just like, whoa, like, I'm going to take 6 months out of my life to make these six things, one garment a month. And it just seemed like this crazy thing. Like, I barely had enough discipline to make it through college. And so me embarking on this sewing journey, I guess, through the sew along and through this book, I was proud of myself for doing it and completing it. And so that was 2012. And that was really when my blog started to pick up traction. Yeah, I was on the map, I guess you would say, like through this sew along.
Okay, so you were now embarking on this journey to sew 6 things in 6 months from the Colette Sewing Handbook. And then you did that and you were sharing about it on your blog, Lucky Lucille, at the time.
Yeah.
So what was next for you? Did you fall in love with sewing your own clothes at that point?
I did. I totally did. Very quickly into that initial sew along, I was hooked. I knew that this was a thing that I wanted to do for as long as I possibly could. And I was still, you know, working at this fabric and yarn shop. So every day I was helping customers pick out fabric for their own sewing projects. And I was just really like, just headfirst into the whole scene and was just obsessed and totally in love. That was a really, I don't know, like a special, it was a special thing to like not really know anyone who sews and then discover, like fumble into this community of people who are equally as obsessed as you are with like sewing and fabric. And it was amazing.
We were talking earlier about points of entry into the community. And I think back then there probably was a lot less of them. Whereas now there's so many Instagram challenges and so many sew-alongs and different ways that you can get involved and find sort of the right fit for you, because not every challenge is going to work for every personality type.
Yeah.
So in all of this time, you were working at this yarn shop and you had sort of moved on from the veterinary career path completely.
Yeah, shortly after moving to Vermont and that internship that I was seeking did not work out, I kind of very quickly was like, I'm okay with this. Like, I know it's going to feel like a wasted degree, but I, you know, I don't have to work with animals to still love them. And like, obviously I have my dog. And so I basically have a degree in how to be a really excellent dog mom. So yeah, like I said, I just kept sewing samples for the shop and got more into like sewing and quilting. And there was a couple of really cool craft fairs in Vermont. And I was just kind of testing the waters to see like, okay, if I sew stuff, is anyone going to buy it? Like, what does it feel like to do a craft fair? Like, what does it, you know, feel like to just pursue that as a job. And I very casually was pursuing some stuff like that, but making zero money. So I can't say that I really had any kind of career at that point besides working at this fabric and yarn boutique, but I loved it. And I was so happy doing it, just slinging fabric and yarn. And I didn't even know how to knit at that point. So I would just walk around the shop squishing all this yarn and like admiring the colors.
So because you mentioned Lucille, I really want to ask you about her. I mean, we know how special she is to you, but for maybe our listeners who don't know who Lucille is, can you tell us a little bit about her?
Oh man, I don't even know where to start. She's my child with 4 legs. I rescued her in 2009 and it was just like love at first sight. Like if you like believe in that kind of stuff and like it's obviously love is like so much more complicated than like love at first sight. But if there was ever a moment, and my boyfriend right now is going to kill me for saying this, if there was ever like a love at first sight moment, it was me and Lucille. Like I can't even put it into words how she makes me feel and like how I felt finding her in that moment. So my family, like we had recently lost our family dog and my mom swore like up and down, we are never going to get another dog because this dog was the best. He was our favorite. Like he was such a good boy. He was a greyhound shepherd mix. So just this really ridiculous mutt of a dog. But then one day my mom came home from work. This was when I was still in college. So I was living at home at the time. And she's like, that's it. I can't stand it. I can't stand like walking through that door and there's no dog in her house. So she was like, if we don't go to the shelter right now and try to find a dog, I'm going to lose my nerve and it might not happen for a while. So I was like, yes, I've been waiting for this moment. Like, obviously I was sad that we had lost our dog, but like I was born into a house with a dog. I've grown up with animals. Like I feel like a shell of a person. Like if I don't have animals near me. So we went to our local shelter and we looked at, you know, some dogs and it's always sad. It's so sad to, you know, walk out of a shelter and like not take all of them with you, but you really do have to find the dog that's right for you and your family. So I think we went to three different shelters, and it was starting to get pretty late in the evening, starting to get closer to closing time. So this was the last stop. And so this was a much bigger shelter, and primarily it was full of pit bulls. And I knew that they were not these monster dogs that they were worked up to be. But it's still like, I never pictured myself like a pit bull owner. I was like, no, like Greyhound. I want like a, you know, shaggy mutt dog or, you know, some big like lumbering oafy dog. But then like we just kept going through like all the aisles of the shelter. And I'm like, why are there so many pit bulls in this shelter? Like it was just really like predominantly blocky headed dogs. And then come to find out that this particular shelter in this town was taking in all of these pit bulls because the shelter in the next town over was euthanizing any pit bull type dog that they got in. In 2009, that was actually pretty common practice. Because the breed of dog was very misunderstood. They were not, it's hard to talk about, like, cause it really just boggles my mind. Like if you meet Lucille, it's just, cause she's just so good. But anyway, so we kind of like made up our mind, like right then and there, that we were going to, you know, walk through the shelter without a bias, and that one of these dogs was obviously good enough for us to take home. And we were just going to ignore what the breed tag said on their cage and just whatever one, you know, was right for us. And there was one dog that kind of caught our eye. And so we took her out for like a walk, and, you know, she was very sweet. And so we were going to put in the adoption paperwork for her. But then when we got up to the counter to like fill out the paperwork, the woman who was helping us with our application said, hey, like, if you like this dog, you might really like this dog that I have housed in my personal kennel as overflow, because there was just no room for her here at the shelter. And we were like, yeah, you know, okay, like we didn't really have anything to lose. Like what's, you know, one more dog to look at. So we followed this woman down the road to her personal kennel, and we were like waiting out in her little waiting room. And then all of a sudden, like the side door, like to the office, just like bursts open in this little white blaze of like stubby, wild energy just came like flying out, mouth wide open, just like the biggest smile that you've ever seen on a dog. And she, and like my instinct, like, cause I went to school for vet tech, like I know like the proper technique to meet a dog for the first time. And I just totally ignored all of that. Like I just dropped to my knees. I stared at her like straight in the face because she was looking at me, and I opened my arms, and she just like fell into my arms and started licking my face and had like her little paws on my legs and then put a paw on my shoulder, and we were like hugging. And that was Lucille. And I was like, oh my God. Like, and my mom and I just looked at each other and we're like, this is the dog. Like we have to take this dog home. She was just, oh, she's amazing. She's the best.
That is so crazy. Like if you had just said no thank you to that woman when she asked if you
want. Yes, like, I know.
It seems like fate. Yeah. Or as
it
close
really,
as you can
like,
get
it
to
truly, it. Yeah. And like it was, yeah, really, it was just such a special moment. And I've never really had experienced that before, like to that intensity. Like, yeah, it was crazy. So yeah, she's my baby, and she's been with me ever since. And she's so sweet at heart. She really, like, when I first rescued her, like my neighbors were like terrified of her. They're like, whoa, you pit bull. Like she's not, ugh. I don't like when you find a dog that's a good dog, it doesn't matter like what type it is or where it comes from. It, like just with people, like, it, you know, it just, I don't know.
Yeah, pit bulls are so misunderstood. I volunteered at a dog shelter when I lived in Montreal, and it just broke my heart. It was all the pit bulls and the dark colored dogs and the
Rottweilers.
That would get just ignored, and they were always the sweetest ones. And that just breaks my heart. And that is such a sweet story.
Yeah, we're so happy for you to have found your spirit animal, as you call her.
It's actually really creepy how much her and I are alike. And I'm not sure if it's because we are like soulmates or if it's because she just spends so much time with me that she's just like absorbed all of my just everything. But like we really, it's kind of scary like how much we are alike personality wise. And she has so much personality. So
Yeah, I can see it just from the photos that you've shared of her. Like, you can see the personality in her eyes. And we'll definitely pop some photos in the show notes for you guys to go and check out Lucille.
Yeah, she's so expressive. She really is.
So your blog is actually named after Lucille, correct?
Yeah, I just liked that name. And I also, really love like vintage stuff too. And when I was Googling Lucky Lucille to see if that name was already taken, I stumbled upon a photo of a World War II bomber plane that was called the Lucky Lucille. And I was like, okay, like this is definitely like a name that fits me and my blog. And so that was just what I decided on doing. And then like for the first 2 years that I was a blogger, like everyone called me Lucille. And I had to like be very like, even when I signed all of my blog posts with my name, people would still comment and be like, oh, Lucille, like, I love your dress. And I'm like, my dog doesn't wear dresses, but I would, I should probably put her in dresses all the time because that would be too cute.
Oh my God. I can't believe you haven't gotten into sewing dog clothes yet.
You know what's hilarious though is like, because she is a very like, just like that classic pit bull shape. Like she's very top heavy. Like I joke that she's bustier than I am. So for her to find clothes is like way harder for me to like try to find a winter sweater for her than it is for me. So if I need to sew for anyone as far as like being able to customize things, like I really need to sew clothes for Lucille because nothing fits her.
Yeah. And I love that you incorporated her into your blog name, but also in other places too. I mean, there's pictures of her and drawings of her, and you've incorporated her into like as a print that's in your shop right now. So I just love that you have just made her such a part of your life in all these different ways.
It's impossible not to. Like if you saw like how she lives and like interacts with my family at home, like literally like everything we do is just like revolves around her. Like she really like, yeah, I'm home visiting my mom right now. And then like I walk in the door and they're like, Lucille, like no one cares that like I'm home. Like they just want to see her. And I can't blame them. I really can't.
So. Oh my goodness. Okay. I think let's switch gears and talk a little bit more about your blog. We wanted to ask you about your photography because your photos are so lovely, both on your blog and on your website and your shop. Do you have a photography background?
No, my grandfather does. My grandfather was actually a documentary filmmaker for the Smithsonian for a long time. And so he took a lot of photos like when I was growing up, and he always had a camera in hand. And so I'm sure that has like inspired me, in a lot of ways, but I don't have any kind of like official photography training. I think I just maybe have kind of a natural eye for composition. And I don't know. I just love taking photos. You know, it was always something that I liked to concentrate on, that I liked to be a focus of my blog, was always like larger scale photos with, you know, me actually paying attention to the composition and, you know, what colors are in the picture and, you know, depth of field. Like that was just stuff that I naturally, it was kind of effortless for me to kind of put that into my blog, I guess, if that makes sense. Felt natural for me to do that.
Yeah, it really comes across, like you were saying, paying attention to the color composition and just the overall composition and the lighting and everything about your photos. They really, I don't know, they create this almost like dreamlike sense that you just want to jump into the photo and be there with you.
Thank you.
So how has your blog evolved over time? Because you started off blogging more about your me-made wardrobe. And it's definitely, I mean, you've taken some breaks and you've rebranded and you've changed things up on the blog. So tell our listeners a little bit about that evolution.
You know, it's tough. Like when you start something as a hobby and you do it just for the fun of it because it makes you happy, and then you get so involved in it and you spend so much time working on it that there's really a lot of pressure for you to kind of try to like turn it into some kind of business, you know, like, oh, like I'm getting all this traffic and people are interested in what I'm doing. Like, I guess I should try to monetize. And I just, every time I tried that, it didn't feel comfortable to me. Like I didn't like doing the sidebar ads. I was really kind of starting to resent maybe not. Maybe resent is a hard, harsh word. But, you know, like fabric companies would contact me and they'd be like, hey, like if we send you this fabric, like, will you make something and share it? And that's exciting at first. But then when you kind of are primarily sewing for other people and you're really kind of obligated to drop these links and, you know, talk about this, and even when it's genuine and even when you do like love that fabric and the company, it's still just kind of, it becomes a job. And like, I figured it out pretty quickly that like, I didn't want to blog as a job. I struggled with that for a while. And I still do. That's why my blog has been a little, it's kind of in like a transitional period right now. And when I started doing Home Row, I knew that I always wanted to keep Lucky Lucille separate as my blog for just, you know, like just the fun, like a hobby space for me to just share whatever felt right to share at the time. And also when you are sewing and you're a blogger, and as I mentioned, there's a lot of pressure to like keep creating original content so you can keep, you know, people coming back and reading your stuff. And, you know, if you wait too long in between blog posts, people notice that. So for, I want to say it, like maybe a solid 2 years straight, I was trying to sew one new project a week. And that's so much. And at the end of the year, when I had like 52, you know, new items of clothing, and I'm very much a minimalist now, like when it comes to clothes. So I had just like this overwhelming amount of clothing that I was not ever going to wear. Like it was really fun to sew. It made for beautiful photographs. It was fun stuff to look at. So it was kind of just like, I was like sewing these like small pieces of art, I guess, in a way that just like hung on display in my closet, you know, and I just really kind of started to feel very guilty about that. And it just didn't feel productive. It felt very, it's just kind of like, I don't know, like daunting. And like I said, the guilt. So I knew that I needed to like refocus, like what type of sewing that I was doing. And I needed to reevaluate why, if I was going to keep this blog going, like what kinds of things was I going to share and how often and like what kind of sponsorships I was going to take on, if any. And I'm talking about it like it was like a true business, but I was never making any kind of money from blogging, which made it all the harder because I was putting in the effort like it was my full-time job. But, you know, fabric companies, they send you free fabric and like you don't get paid, you know, outside of that. So I really just kind of I just got sick of it, I guess. I mean, not to the point where I ever wanted to quit blogging, but just where I really needed to refocus like my energy and like how I was going to approach being a sewing blogger.
Yeah, I mean, I can 100% relate to everything that you just said, because sometimes it does feel like a real challenge to get the blog posts out there. And I have those moments where I'm like, why am I doing this? But I also love looking back on my blog and seeing everything that I made. It's such this like a wonderful little time capsule, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Lucille, we're getting... Oh, sorry.
Lucille. You just called her Lucille.
I know. I was thinking, is that Lucille snoring in the background?
Oh, yeah. Yes. She's totally snoring in the background right now. She's very throaty. She's a very...
Oh, my God.
I thought it was an airplane or something.
I know.
Oh, man.
That's so cute.
That's really funny.
Sorry, I've had dogs, that. So I know what dogs snoring sounds like. That's totally fine.
You know, I was wondering like if that was going to come through at any point during this. Yeah.
No worries. Oh my gosh. Sorry, Rochelle. I totally interrupted you though.
No, it's totally fine. We were talking about the pressures of being a sewing blogger.
Gosh, yes. Yes. One thing that I love about your blog is that you've always come across as really authentic and honest in your writing. And that's come through in a few different ways over the years. But more recently, you wrote a blog post last year about a skin disease that you have that you mm-hmm. were so honest about. And I would love if you would be willing to open up a little bit about that and talk about what it was like to share that on the internet and what was the reaction like from the community and how do you feel about all of that now?
Yeah. So I was born with a really rare skin disorder called lamellar ichthyosis. And it's hard to picture, like, if you know what I look like now and you don't know what I looked like as a child. But ichthyosis is a very, let's say, visually striking condition. So my skin, I have a genetic mutation where my skin grows too fast for it to peel off at a normal rate. So when that happens and you're not on any kind of medication to kind of, manage it, my skin grows into these very like thick kind of plaque-like, almost looks like tree bark, I guess, in a way. It's so hard to talk about, not because I'm embarrassed or anything, but it's like, it's difficult to share if you've never seen it and you don't know me personally. I was born with it. I lived with it my whole life, and I really was not taking any kind of medication. Because there's no cure. It's so rare. There are very little treatment options. So up until I was 15 years old, I was just very obviously had a severe skin disorder. And if you look at my blog post that I wrote for Ichthyosis Awareness Month, I'm holding a picture of myself as a child, and that really, like, you should just, I maybe pause this and like go and listen and see. So as I talk about this, it can kind of feel a little bit more real, I guess, or easier to empathize with. But anyway, so, I grew up with this very kind of disfiguring condition, disfiguring in a way. And it's just, and I, there's, you know, when you walk out into the world and like just a countless amount of strangers see you on a daily basis, and they're going to judge you in whichever way they feel is appropriate in their brain. And so often we are seen and no one gets to tell their story or explain, you know, anything about themselves. So this was a blog post that I've always, always wanted to write. And I finally worked up the nerve to really open up and share about this, because it was something that I was starting to feel like each year that I continued to blog and did not share about my skin, I really kind of felt like an imposter of myself, because I was only posting photos of me on days where my skin was clear. I was only sharing, you know, photos of myself where you couldn't tell that there, you know, was anything potentially different or weird or wrong with my skin. And it just really felt like it was not a genuine version of myself. I kind of felt like I was lying a little bit, especially to like people that I had become friends with because they had followed my blog for so long. And like I said, like, I'm not embarrassed about my skin. It's just, it's hard to, especially on the internet when like you, like a photo is like a frozen moment in time. So if you have like, you know, something stuck in your teeth and like you share that photo, like you can't take it back. Like you don't get to, you have to constantly defend yourself almost in like every photo that you share that isn't picture perfect. And so I wanted to write this blog post where I could for once control the information that I was sharing about myself and putting out there, so I could share photos of me with my skin, like in the cycle that it goes through where it does look shocking. And I could explain with those photos, like my backstory and what it is and like what I live with. And especially because my skin so highly influences the types of clothes that I like to wear, the types of fabric I like to use when I sew. And so it really is like an integral part, like a piece of myself. And, so it was just high time that I kind of like let that out there and, you know, came clean, I guess, so to speak, about this other kind of secret side of me that I was not unwilling to share, but it was just, I didn't want to constantly defend myself and my skin. Like, I just wanted to like share my sewing projects. I didn't want to constantly be like, oh, sorry guys, like my skin looks dry, like forgive me, because you see like bloggers do that kind of stuff all the time for things that are way less, you know, like, oh, like my hem is a little crooked, like, sorry, you know, like, and I just, for so much of my life, I was like the weird girl with the weird skin, and like to be able to, you know, have a blog and only share the best version of myself was something that I really kind of, I like that. I mean, who doesn't like that? Who doesn't like having like a space where they can only share excellent photos and they can only share their best work? And so I was doing that, but then also kind of, you know, feeling a little guilty and a little, like I said, an imposter. And then also I'm a camp counselor at a dermatology camp for children who have skin conditions just like mine. And, you know, I'm always just so inspired by these kids and how fearless they are and just being themselves. And so it kind of felt like a disservice to them for me to, you know, in a very public way, like not be proud of my skin. And so, yeah, I really just decided that it was high time to talk about ichthyosis and like put out a very public, but I wanted it to be uplifting and inspiring. I wanted to share all the potentially good things that I find, about my skin, like all of the interesting facts. I didn't want anyone to pity me. And so I don't know. I mean, I guess read the blog post.
It is an absolutely amazing post, and I really appreciated reading it and getting to hear that side of your story, because like you said, I had no idea that you had a skin disease until you put that post up. And, you know, it really just let me into your personal life a little bit, and I really respected you for posting it.
Thank you. And I'm sure it was a shock to so many people who followed me and really just had no idea. And I knew that that might be the case. But I mean, if you're going to, you know, come out with that information, you got to do it right the first time. And you got to really kind of let it all out there and then give people the time to digest it. And then, you know, be like, oh, yeah, like that totally makes sense for Rochelle to be that person. that was authentically me, I think, like for the first time in a lot of my blog stuff. So it felt good.
Yeah. And you mentioned wanting to keep it positive. I think you said something along the lines in the post of that, you know, just from looking at the photos, you don't have to tell people that this disease has affected you immensely in your life. Just from looking at the photos, you can understand that immediately. So focusing on the more positive things, and you referred to yourself in the post as a real live mermaid, which I thought was just perfect.
Yeah, well, it's like ichthyosis. It literally translates to fish disease in Latin. And it's so like, ugh, it just sounds ugly. And if I was a small child again, and like mermaids were as cool as they are right now, I totally would have walked around telling my classmates like I've got mermaid disease, and I probably would have been like way more accepted way more quickly. But it just, you know, but it's fine. Like I grew up to be a happy adult, well adjusted, and I manage my condition and I know my limits. And like I said, I just always look for, like, cause my skin has also awarded me a lot of opportunity. Like I'm now co-director of this camp, this dermatology camp. And, you know, like the people I've had the opportunity to meet, I'm a very self-disciplined person. And so there's a lot of good that has come from growing up in the situation that I did. So I don't pity myself, and I just, it is what it is.
And do you find that sewing and crafting has helped you to kind of cope with the day-to-day emotions that come up or challenges that come up related to your skin disorder?
Definitely. So my skin is very sensitive, as you might guess, and so much of like what's out there, you know, in a store, like it's polyester fabric, it's scratchy, like my skin does not breathe well at all. I have a really hard time like regulating my own body temperature. So when I started to sew for myself, and then all of a sudden I was able to, you know, pick and choose, like which fabrics, like I could directly control like my comfort on a daily basis. You know, like what I chose to sew for myself was amazing, so liberating. And so now, like, you know, just being able to make my own t-shirts, like I know that is like kind of boring and not everyone wants to sew their own t-shirts, but the fact that I can, you know, have a t-shirt that's not too tight and it's comfortable for me and the fabric is 100% cotton, and it's just, it does, it makes me feel good, like physically and mentally and emotionally and creatively and all of those things.
Yeah, I mean, that's really good to hear. And honestly, you inspire me, Rochelle, with your positive attitude and how you approach life and how you know yourself and you're not afraid to talk openly about what you deal with. So mad respect for that.
Thank you.
I'm curious to know, since posting that and since sharing your story, have you felt differently? You mentioned, you know, feeling a little bit fraudulent, posting all these photos of yourself with your skin in its ideal condition. How are you feeling about that now?
Definitely a huge weight has been lifted off of me, I think, because there's been a lot of times where I've wanted to go to like a trade show or some sort of like sewing retreat. And it's kind of nerve-wracking to know that, like, you know, I would be showing up there and I didn't know like what my skin would look like, and I'd have to like come with my small arsenal of like moisturizers and like all of the stuff that I need to care for my skin. I mean, you know, because like people in the sewing community are very supportive, they're very understanding, like no judgments. And so it was mostly like just in my own head that I would have felt, you know, awkward or uncomfortable in any way. Like most people that I meet, and when they meet me for the first time, like it's not even a thing that they comment on. But just the fact that like that post is out there now, like you can read it, you know, privately to yourself, and you can, I don't have to really kind of make an excuse for myself or explain myself if I were to, you know, like if I ever show up at camp workroom social and like I've got, you know, everyone's like, oh, like you've got a lot of skincare stuff with you. And I'm just like, yep, that's just how I do. And they'd be like, oh, that's awesome. And, you know, whatever. So I think that just for me personally, just to have that weight lifted was probably the biggest way that I feel changed. But also just the amount of people also living with this condition, or they are parents of children that have ichthyosis, that found my post and just the comments that poured in on like, you know, oh, my child has such a tough time at school, and reading your post and how positive you are as an adult, like just really gives me a lot of hope that they will make it through all of the tough stuff that they are dealing with as children and not be bitter and not resent humanity and, you know, go on to do, you know, really great things for themselves. And like that, just reading through those comments, like just made me cry. Like it was so, just really, when I put that post out there, like it was kind of selfish, honestly, like I said, for me, just like get this guilt off myself and to just like put that stuff out there, like for me, but then how many people it ended up helping or affect in some way was really like, whoa, that was incredible. It was to this date, like out of all of the years that I've been blogging, out of all of the posts that I've put out on my blog, this one got like tens and tens of thousands of views. It's my most viewed post ever.
Wow. And that's a good thing, right? I mean, it's so amazing to touch so many people and to have that reaction or response from the community and from total strangers with you sharing your story. I mean,
yeah, it sort of makes you wonder why you keep those things in when you do open up, because the community is so supportive and amazing and makes you feel like you can say anything and not be judged, you know?
I know. It's so funny how like we're all just kind of walking around like holding these things about ourselves that we're uncomfortable with. And for whatever reason, we're just like kind of afraid. And then when you do start talking about it, you find out that everyone else also has like a thing that they're either self-conscious about or wish they could change. And you're just like, oh, like why was I walking around thinking that like I had this thing that I had to guard that I couldn't, you know, be myself, when really like it's just, I think that's like, you know, like when you get out of high school and you kind of have to, you know, for so many different reasons, like, you know, be a different best version of yourself.
Another thing that you mentioned recently, a couple days ago, actually, on your Instagram that really resonated with me was you were talking about Home Row Fiber Co. and how you over the years have pivoted with your business and, you know, what you're doing in relation to sewing and knitting and monetizing that, and how it's taken you a while to find your place, but it was such an inspiring post because you were kind of encouraging people not to give up and to keep trying different things until you find something that really sticks and resonates with you. So can you talk to us a little bit more about that and how that happened for you?
Yeah. So one thing that I really kind of wrestled with over the years, and one thing that actually sewing and knitting have really helped me work through, is how much time it takes to become good at something or to like just figure something out about yourself. I think, you know, when we're children, we kind of develop this false sense of, you know, you do something that's like pretty good and like for encouragement, you know, your parents or your teachers are like, wow, like great job. Like you know, you're so good at that. And so you grow up thinking that if you don't hear that immediately, that like, oh, you're not naturally good at that thing. Like you should not pursue that thing because like you didn't get immediate praise for it. And it really like, it takes so much time like to, you know, to become good at something, to learn a new skill and to really like, not even master it, but just to be like pretty good at something takes years and years. And also, I think there's this false sense of like when you have a, you know, any kind of like business idea that you have to get it right the first time, you have to launch it, that's it. Like you, whatever your initial business plan was, like you have to stick to it and like every word is set in stone and like pivoting is bad and rebranding is bad. And I think especially now that everything is online and everything is so front and center, that when businesses do launch and they do really well immediately, you just think, oh, like overnight success, like they got it right the first time, they have all their stuff figured out. And what you don't see is like maybe how many times that person has tried something and failed behind the scenes before they launched this thing for what you think is the first time and, you know, found this immediate success. When really, like, it's not, it's never like that. Like you have to really just keep trying stuff and figuring out what kind of works and what doesn't really work. And I don't really believe in like total utter failure. I think like there are plenty of things that you discover that you're not good at, or you're not willing to try to get better at. You don't have the patience or the time to put in. And so you decide like that you're going to, you know, try something else or do something else. And pivoting and reassessing like where you are in your business or even just your ideas for a future business, like you have to be willing to reevaluate where you are. Like that's part of growth. Like that's something that all businesses do, and they most likely don't do it publicly, but you know, like every quarter, like big businesses are like, okay, what did we get right this time? What is not working? What products do we need to ditch? Which ones do we need to, you know, bring in and try? Is this a brand image that we want to continue? Does this make sense for us? Blah, 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 all that stuff. And it's difficult when you get started from like a very, like I said, with my sewing blog, like kind of figured out pretty quickly that I didn't want to monetize that I didn't want to be a sewing blogger. But meanwhile, I'm still like sharing all this stuff. I'm still sharing all these things that I was trying to pursue. Like so it was very openly and very public about like, oh, what's Rochelle trying to do with her life today? And like, you know, so that whenever that didn't work out and I would try something else, like it was, I was always like very candid about it. And what I guess ultimately discovered about myself was that I love sewing, obviously, but I did not want to launch a pattern company because I personally, just didn't fall in love with the drafting aspect. I love designing stuff. And I did take a pattern drafting course, and I had like paid a bunch of money for someone to do branding for a line of patterns that I thought I was going to launch. And then I was in like deep in the pit of my stomach. I was like, this doesn't feel right for me. Like if I launch this, like I know like within a year, like I'm not going to want to do it anymore. So I turned away from that. That was a pivot. And then I decided, you know, I was going to teach myself surface pattern design. So I kind of did that behind the scenes for a couple of years, and I was experimenting with the surface pattern stuff and like spoon flower and like trying to launch a spoon flower shop and being a fabric designer. And then I decided that that wasn't exactly the piece either. And so meanwhile, like over the course of like all of these years where I'm trying to figure it out, like I stumbled into Home Row Fiber Co. by accident, because when I initially launched it, my original like kind of brand vision or business vision was very different than what it is right now. If you were to go to my shop, and what I kind of discovered was that I was just going to do what felt right at the time, which was I was going to design fabrics on my own terms, and I was going to sew these yarn bowls because I knit and I always keep my yarn in like this little, you know, fabric basket essentially, and that I was making for myself, and that I was going to try to sew some stuff for people who knit, because most of the people who sew aren't going to buy something that someone else sewed because they could do it themselves. So I kind of quickly learned that if I was going to put my business pants on and try to be like an actual business owner and finally make some money for once to support myself doing, you know, the sewing and doing the designing and all of the stuff that I'd been trying to launch into a quote career for such a long time, like I really needed to take myself seriously, to research like some, you know, marketing, some business stuff, and to like try to actually figure this out. And so when I started sewing the yarn bowls, and I, like I said, was designing, or I do design my own fabrics for them, and I started sewing stuff kind of more geared towards knitters, like all of a sudden I started getting all of this like traction, I guess, like, you know, positive interest. People were like, wow, like your work is so beautiful, because it was the knitting community that I was a part of, but it's like, I'm still like a sewer. Like, I think, you know, bottom line, like I'll always consider myself a sewer slightly above like where I am as a knitter. So the knitting community, when I started making stuff for people who knit, kind of rediscovered me like for the first time. And when they were seeing like this, like, you know, new pivot that I had put out there and like discovering me through that, it was like they were seeing all of this stuff that I had been trying so hard to get to stick together, you know, through all of these years of me as a sewing blogger. And it just made sense, like in front of fresh eyes, like me designing stuff and like me developing my own patterns, like for my products, and me designing, you know, the artwork and me sewing, but for the knitting, you know, aspect of it. And I love knitting. Like I love knitting as much as I do sewing, like for very different reasons, but I never meant to necessarily like cut out the sewing community from Home Row Fiber Co. And I think there's a lot of crossover between people who sew and also knit. But when you're a sewing blogger, like there's a lot of pressure to like stay in your niche. And, you know, like you have to like do this specific thing and like all sewing all the time. And so it's hard when you have a lot of different hobbies that you want to try to melt into one cohesive thing. And it's so difficult to do that, especially when there's a lot of competition out there. And so I really am just very lucky that like last summer, I just happened to, you know, put the right ingredients together in the right way in front of the right audience to make it like a thing that like I can actually like support myself doing, and I'm happy, and I can blend, you know, all of my different hobbies into one thing that like, you know, actually makes some sense for once.
Absolutely. I mean, you've done such a great job with Home Row Fiber Co. And you really have kind of paved your own way. I think you found your own niche and you haven't followed all of those rules, I think, that we think exist out there for sewists having to find a place in the sewing community if you want to start a business. You've sort of been doing your own thing. And I am fascinated by what you're doing, because you do almost everything yourself, right? You do all of the sewing and everything yourself.
Yes, like to a fault. Like it's getting to the point where it's just plain stupid of me to like have my hand in like everything. I'm just like, I'm too, because I'm, you know, very like independent, like to a fault. Like if someone's like, oh, like I can help you with that. And I'm like, no, I can do this myself. And like, I don't, like that's not always a good thing. So very quickly, I'm going to have to start like, you know, accepting some help from people, or I'm going to burn out like before I even, you know, get anywhere. But I, you know, like I am proud of like how much that I do myself. And I do like to do all of these things myself. But
Yeah, I think, I mean, you should be proud. And I have to say, I feel like that is the case for a lot of new business owners, entrepreneurs. You know, you start off and you kind of have your hands in everything, and then you learn that you have to delegate some things and contract some things out to just keep your sanity.
Yeah. Stick to like that one or two things that are so uniquely you that you bring to the table. Like, for example, the design of the fabric. I mean, you're designing on your prints on the fabric, and also like you have posters and you have notebooks and you have enamel pins, and all of the design for all of them is honestly breathtakingly good.
Thank you so much. Yeah, like the design, like I really just want to be a designer. Like I love sewing, and I love like, but you know, like when it comes down to it, like I really just love designing, and I miss garment sewing so much. Like for myself, like I'm just itching to like, you know, get my sewing blog like back to where it was, where I was just like, you know, making some things for me. But like right now I'm just and I'm not complaining because I'm very happily too busy with sewing, you know, my stuff for my shop, but just desperate to like sew some things for me.
Yeah, it's a balance, and we're sure that you're going to find your way back to your blog eventually. But in the meantime, it's wonderful seeing all of the products that you're producing. And I would love to hear more about the surface design process and how you go about laying out these prints that you're using for your designs, you know, what programs you're using, and then how you're actually getting the design onto the fabric.
So I use Adobe Illustrator, which is something that I taught myself. And if you've never used Illustrator before, it's a huge program. There's a lot of tools going on, kind of like if you're like familiar with Photoshop and you open that program for the first time, and there's like no how-to guide, really. You're just like fumbling through, like clicking on every single icon, like trying to figure out like what it does. But I do have a pretty good grasp on Illustrator now. And so I do use that for all of my design work. A lot of my designs either start as a block print, because I love block printing, or as like a really crappy like sketch that I then kind of scan in and I'll clean up digitally, or I will take a photo of something. Like my one print that I would say is my most popular one that has the hands with the needles. Like those are my hands that I digitally traced. And then like the feathers and like the stars on the arm, like those were actually like block print motifs that I like stamped onto a piece of paper and then scanned in and like made that a part of the design as well. So like everything that I do, like none of it is clip art. Like all those, the needles, the knitting needles, like I built all of that from scratch in Illustrator, like one tiny little shape at a time. And then the process after that is to like organize the artwork into some kind of repeat. Cause I, you know, from being a garment sewer, like I love like when things are seamless, like when the pattern like perfectly repeats across the seam. And since I was building like my yarn bowls that I make, like I developed like the pattern for that too. So since I knew like what all of those dimensions were, it allowed me to also develop the fabric. So then like when I cut those fabrics out and I seam them together, like the dimensions are perfect. So everything repeats seamlessly across the side seams.
Caroline pointed this out to me this morning. We were looking at your Instagram and she was like, the repeat matches perfectly on the side seam. And I was like, what? And so I went, yeah. I was like checking all of them. I was like, this is insanity. Like, yeah. That is so cool. So you just print it exactly the right size so that when you sew it, it's seamless on the sides.
Yeah. Yeah. So it looks like I fussy cut everything, but really like very little fabric goes to waste because I just know it perfectly lines up already based on the dimensions of like the pieces that I cut out.
That is genius. Wow. You're a genius.
I'm just really like a stickler and like a obnoxious like perfectionist, I guess, about certain things. And so like it was just something that like I had to be done. Like I had to do it. In fact, like one of my prints when I first launched it was the Dearly Beloved print. Like that one was a scatter print that did not repeat across the side seam at first. But I've since gone back and like started the whole pattern over from scratch. So now it does repeat across the side seams because I'm insane.
Insane or amazing. So where do you get your fabrics printed?
Okay, so after doing a lot of research, because I am a small budding company and a lot of fabric, if you're going to have it custom made, like the minimums are outrageous. Like it's just so far beyond like what I could invest in at this time. So I go to Spoonflower, and that's just, it allows me to like print what I need when I need it, because some of my prints sell better than others. So I can just get the, you know, the prints on demand. It allows me to have 100% total control over the colors that I use, how many colors, like I said, how I'm laying out my prints so they'll repeat seamlessly. And it just, that's just what made sense. Like I was familiar with Spoonflower, like, cause I'd used it like, you know, several years leading up until this point. So I was familiar with the interface and I knew what the quality of fabric was like. And it allows me to have like really small minimums when I need them. Eventually, I would love to, you know, to go full scale and, you know, contract like a quote real fabric manufacturer and like have it done in a more industrial standpoint, I guess. But like for right now, like this works for me and I've gotten nothing but compliments like on the fabric and the quality of print and stuff. So I'm just going to keep doing this for as long as it makes sense. But yeah, pro tip, go to Spoonflower.
I have heard good things about the quality of Spoonflower fabrics. I haven't personally tested them, but it's really nice to hear that you have been working with them and that you trust them as a source for your fabric. So if there's anybody else out there looking to create their own prints and either, you know, do it on a small scale for a business or even just personally, then it's great to have that recommendation from you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think they have a lot of good tutorials and tips and stuff on their website for creating prints, because it is daunting getting into the surface design aspect and how to create those repeat prints. And they have lots of tips and will guide you along that process. So that's cool too.
Yeah, definitely. They're great. And I really love their whole, their business model, like the types of, you know, like people that they support. And they're a very liberal company, very open-minded. And I also love knowing that I'm supporting a company that shares my values too. So
tell us, what does the day look like for you right now? I know you're super busy and you're doing all of your own production, but what is a typical day for you?
Honestly, really boring. Like I don't, like I do try to stick to like a set schedule, but I also have some physical complications sometimes. So depending on like how I physically feel, like when I wake up, like maybe I need to take a longer shower, like maybe I need to give myself some time to just kind of like get, you know, comfortable and kind of find, I don't know, I don't want to say find my zen, because that is just, I'm not like a yoga person or anything like that, but just like settle, you know, just like evaluate like how I feel on a day-to-day basis and like let that dictate my workflow. Because if you are constantly working against what your body is telling you to do, like you are just never going to be very productive. So I learned a long time ago that like you need to listen to yourself and, you know, you need to put yourself first in like that respect. But yeah, so then I, my workspace quickly outgrew like my smaller workspace. So right now I've like taken over my entire dining room in my house, and I'm really excited to eventually get to the point where I can like have like a studio space for myself. But I have a cork board set up on the wall, and that has all of my invoices and like what orders like I need to work on. Like, so every order that I get in that's for a wholesaler, like those are made to order. Anything that I put up in my shop is either in stock or it's sold out. Like I don't do made to order stuff in my shop because I think it would just very quickly get overwhelming to keep up. So I look at like what wholesale accounts are due like per week, and I sew assembly line style. So I will maybe spend a day or 2 days cutting all of the fabric that I need. And then I will sew like everything, like the first step, the first two pieces together of everything. And then I kind of assemble things like that. And I know like that sounds boring to a lot of people, but I love it. Like I love doing like those repetitive, like everything's the same, like everything's a straight seam. And I really like, I thrive on that kind of like monotonous, like it sounds so weird to say, but I do, like, I love it. I love assembly line sewing and just like the small, you know, at the end of the day, I have like a small army of bags and they all look the same. And I just find a lot of, I don't know, like satisfaction in that, I guess. Yeah. And like, that's it. And I'll just sew all day and sometimes into the night because I am quickly like gaining like momentum to the point where like I'm a little bit overwhelmed with like how much sewing I'm doing on a daily basis. And I think it's time for me to branch out and try to find some help because I'm still too young to have the back problems that I'm developing from like being hunched over a machine. So
it sounds like you are doing really well. And it's so exciting that you have wholesale orders. I'd love to know, how did you get into wholesaling? Was it just like some shops approached you, or did you pursue that yourself?
It was totally by accident. Like, I started like making these yarn bowls, and partially the reason why I even started doing that is because I knew I was moving to the Finger Lakes, like out of my hometown, and I had all of this fabric backstocked. And I was just trying to like, you know, think, okay, if I can get rid of it, then I don't have to pack it. So I was just like making some stuff and like trying to maybe sell some stuff off in my shop just to like make some side money and, you know, not have to pack as much stuff to move. And so I was like posting some photos on Instagram, and a shop like saw the photos, and I had not even like launched these yarn bowls into my shop yet. And they were like, are you selling those wholesale? And I'm like, yes, question mark. Like, because I hadn't really considered it. Like, I thought, like, I've always thought, like, you know, since working in like a fabric and yarn shop and like seeing and selling other people's products, I'm like, man, like, how cool would it be to someday like walk into a shop and like see my stuff like in a shop? So it was something that I always wanted to pursue. But I was not ready to get into it when I did, honestly. Like, I did not have packaging. I didn't have hang tags. I didn't even know what I was going to charge for wholesale. Like, I really kind of like fumbled through this, but that's okay. And I think that like when you want to launch like a business, there's never going to be like a pivotal moment where you're like, yes, like I am ready, like checklist, like all of this is done, ready to go. Let's do this. Like in some regard, you are always going to be completely underprepared for something. And so you just have to do it, and you just have to figure it out as you go, like, because you'll find growth in that, and you will find like the right path to be on, like as you sort through these problems when they come up. So yeah, wholesale was totally by accident, and like all of the shops have just approached me, which is awesome, you know, because I know most people it's sometimes a struggle to like get your stuff like in front of the right eyes, or you know, approach shops, and you have to have like a catalog and, you know, pitch yourself. And I'm very thankful that that's not really something I've had to do yet.
Well, your work speaks for itself, and that's why you haven't had to try and sell. It's too hard. I mean, I can see why yarn shops would want to carry your line. It's absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
So let's talk about Make Nine.
Yeah, Make Nine. We wanted to have you on at the beginning of the year so that we could dive into Make Nine a little bit and maybe encourage some people out there who are thinking about participating to keep up with it. So when did you start Make Nine, and why?
This is another thing that I very much kind of like fell into by accident. And it was in, I think it was December of 2015, when the Instagram hashtag #best9 was like first circulating and like becoming a meme. And rather than try to pick out like my best nine photos or find whatever app was allowing people to do this, I decided that I was going to just pick nine projects that I wanted to try to make in the following year. So instead of looking back on the previous year, I was looking to the future and trying to do a little bit of planning and like help me focus and narrow down what I wanted to make. And I was definitely at that point, I was right in the thick of like, what am I doing with my blog? Like, why am I sewing all of these things that I'm not wearing? I was, you know, really trying to narrow down, not necessarily like a capsule wardrobe, but I was really just trying to figure out like, what kinds of shapes do I like to wear? You know, like what kinds of things am I wearing on a daily basis? If I'm going to sew something, like it needs to be something that I'm going to reach reach for every day, or it's just not worth it. Cause I had a closet full of all of this, like these beautiful dresses that I just was not wearing. And I just needed to reevaluate where I was. And it's overwhelming when you realize that you need to completely overhaul like your entire wardrobe, or you need to completely reevaluate like your making habits. And I'm very easily overwhelmed. So I was like, okay. Like I need to just pick a small handful of things. And so it was just easy like to see like these best 9 grids popping up on Instagram. And I'm like, oh, like 9 things. I'm just going to pick 9 things. I'm going to arrange it in this grid that everyone else is doing. And I'm just going to share my 2016 make 9. And so that's how that got started. And like I said, it was always meant to be like a very gentle challenge. Like it was always meant to be something that you could kind of casually join in if you wanted to. Like there was never going to be sponsorships or prizes to win. Like I really didn't want to like make it into some kind of game or any kind of like competition. Like I really wanted it to be like a very personal like thing where you could just sit and be like, okay, like this is what I've learned about myself over the past year. This is what I learned about my making habits. This is what I need in my wardrobe, or this is a thing that I would like to explore, especially for me where I love like just crafting anything. Like I love sewing and knitting and quilting. And, you know, I even dabbled in like embroidery for a while. Like I could totally be into that if I allowed myself the time to like try and pick that up. So Make 9 was also a way for if you were like a multiple disciplinary type crafter, like that you could put a bunch of different types of projects in one space and kind of focus on that. So it was really, again, it was like something that kind of started by accident for like selfish reasons that really grew into something that was the opposite of that. And I'm happy about it. Like, I think it's amazing that a lot of people are like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like, I'm just going to start with like a few things and go from there. And it's always kind of funny to me, like the people who see the challenge and they're like, wait, like just 9 things, like I can make 9 things in a month. And I'm like, that's awesome. So you can do that. But there's also a lot of us that are either pressed for time or would like to maybe have less clothing in their life, or they would like to be more conscious about how they're consuming. Because I also came to the hard realization that I was, you know, like we are trying to escape like the fast fashion world as far as like buying store-bought clothes, but I was totally fast fashion sewing. Like the rate in which I was consuming like, you know, supplies to make something, and at the rate that I was then discarding those garments because I was not how is that different than like a fast fashion, like me going to the mall? So I really also kind of wrestled with that for a while and just decided I needed to slow down, like focus on way less, you know, really decide like what I needed to make for myself. Like I was going to be more strict with how I bought supplies for projects. And so focusing on a smaller number makes it more manageable and more approachable to do that.
I love how you describe the challenge as gentle, because I do think that makes it really approachable for somebody out there who might not have as much time or who just wants to slow down a little bit and just focus on a bigger picture for the year and think, okay, if I can only make 9 things or craft 9 things, then this is what I want to do. So I really love this challenge. How can our listeners participate if they want to? What's the hashtag? How can they kind of put it out there if they want to, I guess, announce their Make 9 for the year?
So the official hashtag is 2018 Make 9. And it's very simple. I have a blog post that has like some questions at the end that you can kind of, that will help you like narrow down if you are totally overwhelmed with choice, and maybe help you kind of pinpoint like the types of things that you would like to make. And then you just pick 9 projects and you can arrange them in a fancy grid. Like there's lots of apps that will allow you to do that very easily. Or you can just kind of make like a photo collage or any way that you want to really share these 9 projects. And then you just, you know, pick your 9 and then, you know, make sure you credit and tag like the pattern companies or, you know, the designers that you choose to share. And then you just work at your own pace throughout the year. And, you know, if you don't finish everything in your 9, like that's fine. What did you learn at the end of the year by what you made or what you didn't make? And that's really kind of the point of it, is to just be a little bit more conscious in what you make.
And what about Take Nine? There's another challenge called Take Nine. Tell us about that.
So I love the idea of a photo challenge. Like every time on Instagram where I see like these photo challenges pop up, and there's usually like one every season or even sometimes once a month. Like there's a lot of them circulating right now. And I love the idea of it. And every time they pop up, I'm like, yes, like I'm going to do this. Like I love the daily prompts. I love having a focus of like what I'm going to take pictures of. And then like 3 days into it, I'm like, this is too much pressure. I can't do this. So I wanted to just kind of like put the option out there, because there were so many people that were doing the Make Nine. I thought that it might be fun to have a way to also introduce yourself, not just introduce the projects that you wanted to make, but introduce yourself and give you a chance to talk about you as a person, what you do, what you make. You know, if you have a blog, like be able to share that in a way that didn't feel like, I don't know, like spammy or something like that. So, and I kind of set up Take Nine in the same way, where there are 9 days of prompts, but you don't have to do them in 9 consecutive days. Like there's no hard start date. There's no hard end date. Like this is the worst, you guys. I have not even started the challenge for myself yet. So this is very much also a gentle challenge. It was just about like encouraging people to make stuff, to share stuff. Like that's really the whole idea around all of it, is I just want people to make stuff.
Well, Rochelle, thank you so much for coming on the show to chat with us all about your business and your blog and your challenges that you run and your life and everything. I believe you have a little bit of a gift for our listeners. Is that correct?
I do. Yes. So I will have a coupon code set up for 15% off anything in my shop with the code LOVETOSEW. And yeah.
That is wonderful. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
You do have some beautiful things in your shop, and I hope our listeners go at least just take a look at them because they're gorgeous.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. We were drooling over your enamel pins earlier. Oh, they're just amazing.
So where can our listeners find you and your business online?
So my personal blog is luckylucille.com. And my business is homerowfiber.co, because I'm so clever like that. Just kidding. My Instagram is at homerowfiberco, and that's really my only Instagram account. Yeah, so Instagram, my blog, and my website.
Perfect. And we will definitely link everything that we talked about in this episode in the show notes. Thank you so much for chatting with us today, Rochelle.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This has been awesome.
Bye.
Bye.
That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. You can find me, Caroline, at blackbirdfabrics.com and Helen at helenscloset.ca.
We're recording today in gray Vancouver, Canada. You can get links for everything we talked about in this episode at lovetosewpodcast.com.
Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search Love to Sew.
And send us your questions about sewing at lovetosewpodcast.com/question, or better yet, leave us a voicemail at 1-844-SEW-WHAT. That's 1-844-739-9428.
Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Next week's episode 30.
Episode 30.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh my God.
Hi, Rochelle. Thank you.
I was going to say, oh my God, is it happening? Is it happening right now?
It's happening. It's happening.
Off to a brilliant start.
Okay, let's all take a deep breath.